have the head of the Commonwealth's COVID-19 Vaccine Advisory Group with us, and he is going to take your vaccine questions at 1-800-423-8255. The advisory group is responsible for helping the state develop a vaccine distribution plan, which is due to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention tomorrow. Dr. Paul Bittinger is the leader of that group and is chief of the Division of Emergency Preparedness at Massachusetts General Hospital and director of the MGH Center for Disaster Medicine. Doctor, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
So I can tell you that the calls are already starting to come in. We'll turn to them in a minute, but it's a great service for you to be with us and to be answering listener questions today. Thank you. It's great. I mentioned this distribution plan just now. Is it finalized, and what will it look like?
So I can't speak to what has happened inside of the state for the plan. It is an update, actually, to the first draft of the plan that was submitted by the state to the CDC. And what the state now needs to do is finalize quantities to request the first allocation, which we are hoping to potentially arrive within the first couple of weeks.
And we are on track, as I understand it, to receive enough dual doses to vaccinate about 300,000 people in this first wave. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. We expect that the 300,000 doses that we've been told to expect are enough for 300,000 people and that the system will automatically order that second dose for us. So when we say 300,000 doses, we hopefully mean 300,000 people that will get vaccinated.
So Governor Baker, I'm going to play some sound for you from Tuesday when he was talking about the high-risk groups that will get first priority, healthcare workers, nursing home workers, older adults, et cetera. Here he is.
That's probably going to be where most of the activity is in December, January, February, and March. The focus is going to be on the people we are all the most worried about, either because of what they do for work or because of their age or because of their physical condition.
So a couple questions there. That, you know, that's 3.5-4 months for 300,000 people. We have a lot of people to get vaccinated over time. So how will distribution to those groups work? And is that the right kind of time frame? Is it going to take that long to get the first tranche of people vaccinated fully?
So I do think the timeline he's spelling out for the high-risk groups seems about right. But the good news is that that's many more than 300,000 doses. We expect that 300,000 number really to be the vaccine that arrives in the Commonwealth by the end of the year or very early in the first week of January. More vaccines should be coming. As your listeners likely are aware, we expect an emergency use authorization from the FDA to come first for the Pfizer product, but then only maybe a week later for another vaccine, Moderna, and having two different products really improves our vaccine availability. There are another one or two that are not too terribly far behind those two that we expect, and therefore the more vaccine we have, the more we can vaccinate people and get through these high-risk tranches as quickly as possible.
Dr. Paul Bittinger is the head of the COVID-19 Vaccine Advisory Group for the Commonwealth and is prepared to take your calls. 1-800-423-8255 is the number. We have Leslie on the line from Harvard, Massachusetts. Leslie, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. My question is, I know for the two vaccines, there needs to be a second vaccine with about a month later. And I was just wondering if the person doesn't come back in a month and, say, comes back in like 3 to 4 months, if you have to start the series all over again.
So that's a really good question. The two different vaccines that we are expecting, the Pfizer and the Moderna, have slightly different repeat schedules. Pfizer is 3 weeks at 21 days, or Moderna is 28 days. What we don't know yet, and we won't know until we see the ultimate document from the FDA, is what's the close window, which I think is exactly what you're asking. How long can you go if you're a little late on that second dose? In the trials, people had up to 7 days later than that end date. So for Pfizer, as an example, instead of 21, you could go out to 28. But that's just from the research trial. For most vaccines, you actually have a broader window. You can get that second vaccination later. But until we see the data from the FDA, we won't know. I'd expect it to be somewhat narrow in the order of 1 to 2 weeks, but unfortunately, I can't say more specifically yet.
What about side effects? Let's take this first 300,000 people who will be vaccinated. You know, we know some people have side effects from a flu vaccine, for example. Well, should we expect some percentage of folks to maybe have a fever or feel a little sick for a couple of days?
We should, and I think these issues are going to likely be more prominent, frankly, with the two vaccines we're expecting than with the flu vaccine. People like me have been trying to say for years that you can't get the flu from the flu vaccine. It's still true. But people do, as you say, have aches or fatigue after they get the flu vaccine. With these two vaccines, the side effects are a little more significant. Up to half of people, maybe even a little more, may have fatigue, muscle aches, even low-grade fevers, and those are pretty common. Within the healthcare workforce, that's going to cause some concern as we vaccinate the healthcare workforce, because those are the same symptoms of COVID that we tell people to stay out of work for. So we're going to have to be testing a lot more people as we're vaccinating in order to make sure we can do this safely.
Could that create a staffing lag, right? If you're assuming that you're vaccinating first healthcare workers who are most likely exposed to the virus in the first place, and now they're showing these kinds of side effects and you got to test them to be sure they don't have it, is that an issue?
So it can be. Most of us are working on plans in order, because in the first 2 or 3 days after you've been vaccinated, having these predictable symptoms is almost assuredly due to the vaccine, that we think that in and of itself may not cause a staffing problem. It will cause a real demand on testing. But as many, maybe as 1 in 10 or a little bit less, may have more significant effects for a day, may feel pretty badly for a day, may need to stay home from work because they're that fatigued. And that can cause a staffing issue. We've actually been telling healthcare systems that they need to plan for that, and they frankly need to stagger their vaccinations so that, for example, not the entire intensive care unit staff gets vaccinated on one day and then the next day has staffing challenges.
Let's go back to the phones, 800-423-8255. We've got Alicia on the line from Roslindale. Hi, Alicia. What's your question?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the vaccinations for children. I haven't heard so much about that. I know they're not quite as high on the priority list, but is anything going to be different about their vaccinations, and where are they on the priority list?
And I think we have, Dr. Bittinger, one other priority list question, so let me grab that one too, and then you can answer both. We've got Bernadette on the line from Cambridge. Bernadette, go ahead.
Thank you very much. How high are incarcerated persons on the list of priorities of those to be vaccinated early? Thank you.
Thanks, Bernadette. Thank you. Okay, Dr. Bittinger, thanks for waiting for that.
Both are really good questions. As far as children go, the youngest trials enrolling children that we're aware of right now go down to age 12. I'm not aware of any research trial enrolling younger children. Because of the dearth of data, we don't know ultimately what the FDA is going to say, either for children between ages 12 and 18 or potentially younger. As you noted, they will be lower down in the priority list because of the risk of severe illness or disease as recommended by CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practice or the National Academies. The hope is certainly research trials are ongoing, and we very much want to continue to accumulate safety data, and that will likely also inform future changes by the FDA if children aren't in the first emergency use authorization. In terms of prisoners, again, the state is considering advisory group recommendations, and so I can't say for sure within here, within the Commonwealth, but certainly the advisory group was very aware of the challenges of congregate settings overall, in certainly the long-term care facilities, which are both congregate settings and tend to have more medically frail and older residents. Those are clearly at the top of the tier, as the CDC's committee has recommended. But I would say that the advisory group strongly understands the concerns of congregate populations overall, and especially prisoners. So I would expect them to receive a substantial priority.
I'd like to grab one more call here, and then I have a few more questions of my own. We've got Craig on the line from Marshfield. Craig, go ahead.
Thank you. My wife and I are in different risk categories, and so I'll probably get the vaccination 2 or 3 months before she does. Once I'm vaccinated, assuming it takes, what are the odds of my passing it on to her despite my being vaccinated, or what are the risks? Do we still have to use the same precautions that we've done with other people?
So it's a really important question. I think two things about vaccination maybe are good to share. The vaccine, especially with the efficacy that we've heard from the studies, is very effective at preventing serious illness or death, especially in those that we think are at high risk. However, no vaccine, almost no vaccine, can prevent illness entirely. And so while community prevalence is high, which unfortunately it has been rising right now, even those who've been vaccinated have a low chance of getting infected, maybe with minimal or no symptoms, but that means you still can shed virus. You would still potentially put your partner at risk. And so it's going to be many months that public health authorities are going to be recommending people continue to take precautions, wear masks when they're in public, all the things that we've been doing. Certainly understand everyone's desire to get on the other side of this pandemic, but what we're recommending, even when one part of a household has been vaccinated, is that everyone follows the same rules until we get community prevalence down low. There is definitely an end of this road where we take our masks back off and get a lot closer to normal, but it's going to be a little more delayed than unfortunately just as soon as each individual is able to get a vaccine.
Let's talk about willingness to take the vaccine. Before the break, we talked to Dr. David Rossman of the Mass Medical Society. He expressed confidence that healthcare workers are going to be prepared to and want to take this vaccine. We have heard some concerns from some nurses' unions and other groups that represent healthcare workers about kind of being in a first group to receive a vaccine that was developed unprecedentedly quickly. I noticed that CNN's reporting today that three former presidents, Clinton, Bush, and Obama, are going to take the vaccine publicly to boost confidence. Are you thinking that the Commonwealth needs to have some high-profile public vaccinations early on to inspire confidence, give the shots to some important folks who will say, hey, this is what we need to do?
I do think, obviously, vaccinating visible important figures is very important in their order of priority within the scheme. I think, you know, there are reasons people have had concerns about vaccine that I think were well stated in the previous segment. I think it's important to recognize that although the speed of scientific development was unprecedented for these vaccines, there's a lot about these research trials that are exactly the same as all the other research trials that we use to evaluate the safety and efficacy of vaccines. These trials are as large or larger as previous vaccine trials for other vaccines. They are subjected to the same statistical analysis and the same independent review and rigor. So there are a lot of reasons to have confidence in these vaccines as they are being independently evaluated by multiple different layers. I think, again, certainly one component of vaccine confidence is seeing people either who may be role models or those who really people trust as trusted messengers getting vaccine. But I think it really is going to take a multi-layered approach for us to address people's questions and make sure that they have a chance to get the answers they need.
I'm going to ask you a question that one of our callers has asked. I'm not sure I'm going to have time to go back to the phones, but I want to get this one in. We have a caller who's got a question about vitamin D deficiency and what that means for intensity of the virus, and does it affect one's ability to be responsive to the vaccine? Do you know?
So I'm not aware of data that would suggest that specific deficiency affects it, but I can't say that I know that definitively. I think for the most part, we still need to accumulate more data on which types of patients might have difficulty mounting a response. But for the most part, we think there are very few contraindications to getting vaccinated and for most people to mount an effective response.
And we've had a couple of other calls both today and other days come in where people just really want to hear, and you're the perfect person to ask this, are you feeling confident that when this vaccine comes in, it gets here, we get the doses in December, is it safe and ready to go? Can we just begin vaccinating people?
So I do believe so, but I want to be very transparent myself that what I want, which is I think what most medical scientists want, is to get that chance to look at the data for the emergency use authorization, because that's what I do as a physician otherwise for any new drug or any new therapeutic I prescribe. I have a lot of confidence in the system that the independent data safety monitoring board, the independent vaccine and related biologic products review board, the independent advisory committee on immunization practice, and the FDA itself are all very important layers of review. I, again, as I would for any other therapeutic, will look at data, but I am very confident that quickly, meaning within days of the emergency use authorization, just as the product is arriving here in Massachusetts, I will have confidence in this vaccine. And as an emergency physician, I will be very eager to receive the vaccine when it's my time in the priority list.
In listening to you, that makes me think about this question of a mandate. You know, the governor has mandated flu shots, for example, for kids to be in public schools after December 1st. He has said that he is unlikely to mandate use of the coronavirus vaccine. Are we going to be able to get to where we need to be without a mandate? And would it even be safe to consider one under the circumstances?
I guess the question to me is instead of the safe to consider, is the practical question. And for my system, the Mass General Brigham Health System, we will not be mandating it initially because it's not practical if we don't have sufficient quantities initially. So I can't mandate something I don't have enough of at the very beginning. We will reassess. We as a healthcare system do mandate the flu vaccine because of the benefits of the vaccine in protecting against asymptomatic transmission. But I think more than a mandate, really what our job is as healthcare leaders is to make sure people get answers to the questions that they have about the vaccine. I do feel that the majority of people will want this vaccine as they have confidence, as they get answers to their questions. It's a little bit strange to say, but I'm encouraged by how many people really want priority in vaccine allocation. Certainly, I've had a lot of outreach over the last several weeks, and I take that as a sign that people really do have trust in the vaccine and understand what it means for us getting on the other side of this pandemic.
We've got about 20, 30 seconds left with you. Anything else you want people to know about the vaccine?
I think what people need to know is that there will be multiple vaccines, and they will ultimately probably have different populations that they are most effective in. But in the history of public health, vaccines have been the single biggest intervention saving lives across the globe. This is by far our single best shot to get past this pandemic and get back to normal life. There are leaders at every level of the system who have no interest in doing anything except for delivering a safe and effective vaccine. I'm in that group, and I really think we're going to have confidence, and I cannot wait for us to look back and be so proud of how we vaccinated so many people in such a short period of time.
Dr. Paul Bittinger of the Massachusetts General Hospital and chair of the state's COVID-19 Vaccine Advisory Group, thank you so much.
Thank you.